Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show, episode number 149. And again, thank you to Pete Fry for that awesome new intro for 2019. That is Pete playing the guitar, and that was a custom recorded track that he came up with for our show intro. And I just, ooh, I love that whammy bar dive at the end too. Good energetic way to kick off the show. But here we are in the polar vortex, and we'll probably get weather reports from Tennessee and Indiana in a minute, because I am with you tonight with the great co-hosts, Michael West and Daniel Dark. Good evening, gentlemen.
How's everything going in the Kentucky realm?
Not much snow in Lexington, but it is cold. You know, cold is an understatement. So, yeah, we're definitely bunkered in here, and got Dubious next to me. He's helped keep me warm with his Russian blue, you know, double layer fur coat here, and yeah, we're definitely not going to be broadcasting outside tonight. That's for sure. Glad about that. So, yeah, Michael's probably Michael said he's under Antarctica conditions, so he's familiar with what I'm talking about.
yeah. Indianapolis today was colder than Antarctica and Everest. So,
well, you know. I was out in short sleeves earlier today, so.
Nice.
And this weekend, it's supposed to be about 70 here, so.
It's supposed to be like almost 60 this weekend, so we'll all be dodging potholes and sick as a dog, so.
Well, I'll take a little warmer weather than this, though. I'll take that, but yeah. That would be good. And, Michael, we have something exciting for you, because I haven't gotten to talk to you since we made the announcement, but you should be very happy about today's guest of honor for Imaginarium that we just announced, Mr. Jeffrey Reddick, Final Destination creator, and in recent films like Dead Awake and, of course, The Final Wish, which just got released, a limited theater run. And, yeah, he's gearing up to do his first full-scale directorial feature project here. And, yeah, Jeff's definitely doing some great, great stuff. He was a story editor on he just recently ended a stint as a story editor on Midnight Texas, the other one that's also from Charlaine Harris, of course, who you all recognize from the True Blood series. And I think Midnight Texas is on NBC, but yeah, that's but I think with Kevin Tenney and Jeff Reddick announced, now Michael, and you cannot refuse. Now you have to come to Imaginarium. We stacked the deck with getting some of your kind of folks here.
these horror folks. some good people there. So
yeah, and for those of you that may not know Kevin Tenney yet, he's of course was the creator of two iconic horror films from the 80s, Witchboard and Night of the Demons. And he's got a lot of credits obviously since then, but those are two that are, you know, like I said, on pretty much a lot of 80s best of lists for horror films. So that's gonna be really exciting having both Jeffrey and Kevin out here. And they know each other and as well, so it's gonna be cool to get to hang out with them and definitely have them as part of our programming and whatnot. So that's
horror,
news.
Horror people are the best people.
But yes,
horrors are
good
the best.
Bunch,
what are you talking about?
So that's probably the biggest piece of news that I have since last week. Yeah, I've got a book signing myself Friday in Vivi, Indiana, at the Community Arts Center. Real nice art gallery on the corner of Main Street and Ferry Street, and that's right at the light in downtown VV, and it's a good place. And they have a special First Friday thing every month where they showcase the gallery art and have special guests, and I am their special guest this time. They don't always have authors, but it's a great, great place for meet and greets and visiting with readers, and I loved my previous ones up there, so I'm looking forward to this one, and hopefully weather will cooperate a bit as far as the snow factors. I am hoping that, yeah, we don't get a lot of snow dumped on us on Friday, but who knows? The show must go on, and I'll be there.
Supposed to be rain.
Okay, I'll take rain. Yeah, I'll take a little rain, but that, yeah, because anytime I'm on the road, I just hate ice. Ice is the one thing I hate to contend with on road trips. So we will see. We will see. So what's going on with you guys since last week? It's been last week's been a blur. I've been working constantly, it seems. Like, I've lived under a rock, so I am definitely not up to speed on whatever's happening with you all.
Well, I've just been chugging along, writing. I'm working at a good pace, finally. So I'm hoping that we can have the final chapter of the Legacy Gods out here within the next 6 months. So I'm
fantastic.
Working on chugging away. I might this year elect to. I hate to do it because it's always such a good time, but depending on where I'm at on this and what kind of a schedule I'm keeping, I might have to bow out of the author fair down there in Louisville or outside of Louisville.
Yeah, on the 13th. I just confirmed with them. Yeah, I will be there. I just confirmed that, I think, a week ago. Because that'll almost be your first one that you missed then. Yeah, because I know you and I have gone back a long time on that one. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've been to every one, I think. So,
But this is
the ninth year.
I think I've been to every one. I know I've been to every one since, like, 2010.
Yeah.
Or 2011.
Then, yeah, we have then.
Yeah.
That was year one.
So I've been to every one. So I don't know, we'll see how it works out, but I'd rather get the book done and get it out and as soon as possible. But are we still in pre-order on the hardcover?
We can still take in some pre-orders. So
okay.
I encourage people to do so, because it is a darn fine quality book. So, just the quality of this release is awesome. So, yeah, you're listening and you are a Michael West fan, get this, because it's a scarcity issue. There's not so many of them that are going to be out there.
I know. And all you people out there who I know, because I've hand-sold some to y'all. If you have the first two novels, Poseidon's Children and Hades' Disciples in hardcover, you got to have the complete set. So, so you need to add this to your bookshelf, because it will be a fine addition to any bookshelf. And if you don't have the other ones, this is still worth getting. You're going to have two illustrations in there that you can't get anywhere else, and they are among the best illustrations that have ever graced my fiction. So real excited about that.
Beautiful dust jacket cloth cover, just the whole nine yards. Yeah.
The beautiful dust jacket, author photo that's in full color and not included in the original release. So a lot of special little tweaks and perks that you get on this that you don't have, and if you already bought the soft cover, this is something that you can keep on your shelf and have for posterity, and then you can always take out the soft cover and read that to get ready for the release of the final book in the series. So
yes,
and
good release.
You know, I've been really really stressed out about this book for some time, this final book. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's because it is the final book, and I don't subconsciously I don't want to say goodbye to these characters, not you know to you know foreshadow anything, but. some stuff goes down. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't know if that was it has been the issue, or it's just been that you know, because it's you would think that knowing these characters so well, having it you know be the fourth book in the series, that it would just kind of like flow, and it's starting to, but it just seemed like it's taken forever for that to happen. But I was encouraged. When I got this latest wave of critiques and suggestions from my pre-readers, really encouraged with what they've been having to say, and I actually went through and was putting in some of their suggestions and you know doing some edits based on their findings about a week ago, and I actually for the first time read the book so far from the beginning to where I am at now, and was really pleased with how well it flowed, and you know, the pre-readers are commenting on how you know the build up to something is palpable, and they're just you know they just like you know we need more chapters. I'm like, well, I need to write more chapters, but but yeah, so you know everybody who's been hanging on. And I encourage all my readers out there. I was going to do a post here coming up in the next week or so. But I encourage all my readers out there. If you're a fan of the Legacy of the Gods, I don't want this. This is the final book now, so I don't want this to be, you know, the series finale of Lost or something like that, where people are like, well, they didn't answer this question, or they didn't answer that question. What the hell? So if you've got a burning question that you know you want to make sure that gets answered in this final installment that you haven't had answered yet, and sometimes it's interesting because sometimes I ask questions and I don't realize I ask questions, and then my pre-readers are like going, oh, you brought this up, and I'm like, I guess I did, yeah. You know, the characters gripe me. It really gripe me because for the last 2 years I've been. And actually longer than that, probably like 2 or 3 books ago, because I knew basically where the story was going. And I was worried about a pacing issue and a plotting issue with this final book. And I was trying to figure out how to get around it. And I was writing like a week or so ago, and one of my characters just opened their mouth and just solved the whole thing. I'm like, well, why couldn't you speak up a few years ago and save me all this stress?
Nice.
But I can share that with you guys because you guys won't look at me funny. So
no, we get it. We totally get it. But folks, you just got to look behind the curtain at process and the use of beta readers. That's a very important thing. And Michael is a master at using, like I said, he has a good group of beta readers and that have worked with him for a while, and that's a good peek behind the curtain right there for writers out there. It's a guy, you know, really does effective use.
Speaking of writers out there, I think congratulations are in order for somebody here.
Yes, we have an award to announce, and I'll let Daniel handle that one because that was just announced this week.
Yeah, I was informed, I didn't even know that Knives Tale was up for an award this late in the year, because I thought I'd already lost all of them that I was up for. And I was informed that Knives Tale actually got the Poison Cup Award with the Crime Masters of America, which really surprised me. You know, When you don't know that you're up for an award, and all of a sudden somebody notifies you and says, "You just won this, you know, this title of, you know, Crime Masters of America Boys and Cup Award. I'm like, okay, great. You know, you tell yourself all the time that, you know, I'm thankful for being nominated. I'm thankful for being nominated. I'm thankful for being nominated. But, you know, you didn't win any of those times and everything because you got beat out by the best book of the year or, you know, somebody or something else. And then, you know, actually winning an award feels a whole lot better.
Yeah.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You and I have kind of been the Susan Lucci that a multiple award show.
Well,
yeah, you know,
well,
that,
both.
Yeah, I was a bridesmaid all year long, and
and he starts off 2019 with a bang. Heck yeah!
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So,
yeah, congratulations on that.
Yeah,
that is fantastic.
Especially
when
it's my first novel out there, you know, to actually win an award on your first novel, it's sort of humbling and sort of, you know, like, can I do it again? Let's see.
And I have to say, as far as the house goes, we had two debut novels that were award winners because, as you know, Nathan Day's Orphan Surfacing won a couple awards, and now Daniel's has.
Yeah.
So we had a couple of debut novels by authors that have won awards. So that's kind of cool, and I have to say that's awesome. So yes, thank you, Daniel, for making that possible too, so we can tell folks about it.
Well, you know, it's that, and you know, for all those that turned down my novel before, booyah.
Yeah.
Hey, we know talent and we see it. But.
Well, you know, and it's funny because, you know, it's first novels are weird because, you know, it's like people still point to my first novel, The Wide Game, as being, you know, their favorite of everything that I've done. And I'm like going, well, thank you, I think. I've just gone downhill from there. Is that what you're saying?
That's awesome. Oh, man. Well, I definitely we're gonna expand this conversation here, but I do want to give a special birthday shout out to Carol Preflatish, who's a great author and a regular listener to the show, hanging out in the chat room tonight. And like I was saying earlier, tonight's show is kind of like a birthday present to her because we have an awesome guest tonight who is a great writer herself, and she's known primarily for her My Beautiful Suicide series, very dark edged and twisted type of stuff. And of course, she's going to be talking about that. She's also a very keen entrepreneur, so she's got a real keen business mind, and she's the force behind Kentuckiana Authors, which I think is one of the best regional groups I've ever seen out there as far as engagement and people participating and sticking to the kind of core of what the group should be about. And got a great, great group there. And off of that, she's got live events that she does, like the Kentuckiana Authors Book Blitz, a yearly event, and other events that she does. And, of course, I am talking about the one, the only, one of a kind, Addie Eve. Welcome to the show,
hey,
Addie.
Welcome.
There she is.
Hey, can you all hear me?
How are you? Yes, very well, very
doing
well.
Doing great. Yeah, I have nothing now to say because you already said it all.
Well, we got to cover everything in detail.
We got
to. We have to give Carol a good birthday show.
Oh,
yeah,
happy birthday.
Well, are we allowed to sing that? Do we get sued for that? I don't know if that works.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Can't
do
copyright
that.
On that one.
I can sing it in Spanish then. How about that?
Yeah, we'll figure out something alternate here. But we'll make sure we'll entertain Carol. She, you know, is home, keeping out of the cold weather and celebrating your birthday here. And we have a lot to discuss with you because you have so many different facets to the Addie Eve world. And you're definitely one of my favorite people around, and very thankful for the events and the groups that you do and all that, because you support authors and presses and events. And yeah, very much one of those people that is, you know, the bedrock of a good, vibrant, like artistic community, the ones that, you know, support the scene. And you need those people so badly, you know, to have a healthy scene. And you are one of those people. And, you know, so I do want, you know, we are going to cover a little bit of that side of you, but importantly, I want people to get a chance to appreciate you as a creative and as an author yourself. And of course, anytime I say dark and twisted, I know I get Daniel and Michael perk up at those words. And so they love anything dark and twisted. So, but yeah, as far as, you know, then too, you know, you're going to be getting into children's books, I believe. And so I want to cover you first as an author. So let's dive the deep end and tell us about your My Beautiful Suicide books, because they're very well branded, very well presented, and talk about those for a little bit.
Well, I the first book of the series is called My Beautiful Suicide. It's about a young girl whose life is rough. It's not until her parents have divorced, her brother dies in a car accident, but it's not until she accidentally kills someone that she decides to take her own life. But instead of leaving her family with the pain and the hurt of a suicide, she makes herself available for the local serial killer to do it for her. But when she goes out and she, you know, does her nightly jogs, and she gets attacked, her instincts take over, and she ends up killing her attackers. And then she realizes, hey, I have a knack for this. So that's where it gets dark and twisted. And so she pretty much, the first book is like the making of a serial killer. And there are four books in all. My Beautiful Suicide, Controlling Cosette, How to Kill a Pedophile, and Stupid Girl. Yeah. So there are four books in all, and they're getting ready to be the first two are already on audiobook. We're working on the third one, How to Kill a Pedophile. That's going to be on audiobook soon. So we're very excited about it. Yeah.
So are they anything like
them? Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Are they anything like the movie Hard Candy?
Oh, I haven't seen Hard Candy.
You need to watch that one.
I need to watch Hard Candy. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Got it. I'm getting Netflix right now. Oh, no. Okay. yeah, so that's basically what I, you know, so that series is finished. I'm working on a children's books, and it's really hard to not be so dark, you know, because it is a children's book and that's what I'm aiming for, but it's really hard to not be dark. I got to get out of that mode, you know. So
children need darkness in their life too, you know.
Yeah, you're not that kind of dark. I don't want to raise up serial killers and they'll all blame me. So yeah, so that's what I'm working on right now, and working on some new things for Kentuckiana Authors. So kind of excited about all this.
So your main focus right now is going to be the children's books for the time being, author-wise.
Author-wise, yes, I have a children's novel. It's about voting. It's a, you know, like a little political, mini political theory book. Mm-hmm. It's just a single one. But I want to hurry up and get it done and edited and out, so that way, you know, it can be before the 2020 election. You know, I got to take advantage of that time of the year. So so I have to hurry up and get that one done. And then I have another that's a middle grade book. And then my other children's series, I have, it's an alphabet, you know, every animal is a letter of the alphabet, and that's like a little cute surprise ending. So that's, you know, another series that I'm doing. And then after that, I have some young adult ones already lined up, and and those are unfortunately going to be dark just because that's just how I write. That's just what comes out. So I try to be all sunshine and smiles, but
are sloths going to make appearances in these children's books? You mentioned
absolutely.
Animals.
Absolutely.
I know you love that particular animal. So yes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So
it wouldn't
you're not doing a
sloth.
Dark version of that, where you've got D is for demons,
yeah,
H is
really.
For whorehounds,
C is for cauldrons, yeah. No, no, it's funny because the animal one, it has it's dark and dreary at the beginning, and then it's a fun end, you know. So it's very it's very me to do these, you know, the animal ones. So when those come out, those will be really, really cute. So I'm still working on that. But I have so many projects. You know how it is when you're a writer and you have like 20 different voices in your head, especially once you finish one big project, then all of a sudden, you know, it's like the other personalities want their turn in the light. So they're all trying to get ahead and get their voice out, but I'm trying to keep them all in order. So
nice.
So that is what I'm doing. Yeah. That's the best way I could describe it. You know, I have to give each personality time to talk. So that's
you heard a little bit from Michael early about, he was talking about development of his fourth Legacy of the Gods book. But what is, describe your process a little bit as a writer. He was talking about some of the way he interacts with his beta readers during the writing of the novel, and things like that. I'm not asking specifically about beta readers, but what is your process in your world?
What I'll do is I'll write out the whole book. Like when I did the My Beautiful Suicide series, I wrote the entire series first. So that way everything flowed all together from beginning to end. So everything made sense. So that way I didn't go back in the fourth book and be like, oh, you remember so-and-so's long lost cousin, you know, like they do on soap operas and stuff like that. I hate that. So I wrote it all in one big giant blob. And then I separated the books afterwards. So after I did that, and then I didn't send it out to anybody to read. You know, my husband read it, and then I did some more editing and editing and editing, and then I sent it out to be looked at by an editor, and that was a process in itself. I had two different editors. So my first editor, which I spent way too much money on, it came back, and it still had all these mistakes. So I sent it to the second editor, who was less than half the price, which was fantastic, and she came up with 15,000 mistakes. 1,000 mistakes.
Oh.
Between commas. I mean, apparently I didn't learn anything in elementary. Between commas just mainly punctuation. All punctuation it was so disheartening. And I'm like, what did I pay the first person for? So after losing out on all that, so my second editor, Lisa, did a fantastic job. And she's been the one I've stuck with all the way through. So very, very happy with her. And, I don't let anybody read it till it's all cleaned up.
So done. So. But now that we've learned that you actually created had the whole series done before you moved forward with it, that kind of segues into the cover art, because you did a really good, I think you did a great job with selecting your covers. It brands well. I mean, when you look at any of the covers, you can tell that they belong together. I mean, it's, you know, very connected,
yeah.
You know, kind of look, a very themed stylization. Did you, the covers, did you just get them all done at once, or did you get them done as each was released?
As each was released, I got them done. I had my first cover artist. I took the pictures on the first one and the last one, and then I had a photographer for the middle two.
Mm-hmm.
But the I had in my mind exactly what I wanted all of the covers to look like as I was writing them. As I was separating the books, I knew exactly what I wanted them all to look like. So that way they did match. And, you know, all you had to do is glance at them, and you knew that was that series. So I already had that in mind. It was just, you know, I even had the colors in mind. So it was all already done, but we did do it one at a time, you know, so my model.
One at a time.
You know, we brought her in each time, so, yeah. And I met her at Walmart. That was interesting. She was standing in line in front of me in Walmart, and I'm like, you look just like my main character. Can I take a picture of you? But I warned her. I said, okay, this is what the book's about. Do you really want your face on them? So, she thought it was fun. Yeah, I had to warn her. You don't want to be like, oh, I recognize you, you know. She was thrilled. She had a good time doing it. So there you go.
Before I end up hogging all the questions on the writing, Michael and Daniel, since we're dealing with a dark and twisted series, and I know you two love this area. So yeah, jump forward if you have some writing questions at this point.
Well, I wish that I, in hindsight, that I had written my series all at once. I sort of have, but what are some of the? Did you as you were writing the series, and you were, you know, four books into it? Did you have any issues wrapping it up, or did it just come naturally?
When I completed the first book, you know, the first section, I knew in my mind that it wasn't done, and so my writing process, I guess, before I put anything down on paper, I'll sit and stare. You know, you just stare out the window, stare at a wall, whatever. You know how that is.
Yeah,
it looks like I'm doing nothing, but I'm really thinking. So I would just, you know, for days, just sit there and stare and get the entire plot written out in my head and figure out all the little nooks and crannies, I guess you could say, to of the whole spiderweb, to figure out everything. And then I would put it all down and then fill it all in. So after I finished the first main section and the voices wouldn't shut up, I continued on to the rest and wrote it all at once. So I already knew everything that was going to happen. I knew how I wanted it to end, in a big, spectacular, grand finale, you know, that's very appropriate to the series. So I didn't want to, I didn't want to have a Dexter ending, you know.
Right.
You ever watch that series and the ending, you're like, are you freaking kidding me? So I didn't want to have one of those, which is funny because I wrote the whole series before I saw Dexter, you know, and then somebody goes, oh, that sounds like Dexter. You should watch that. And I'm like, kidding me? And
I
loved it.
As you were saying it, yeah.
yeah. And now it's one of my favorite shows. But so I wrote it first and then I saw Dexter and I'm like, wow, that's like really cool that somebody else thinks the same way I do. So. Yeah. Or maybe it's not good that somebody thinks the same way I do. I don't know.
Well, I always had that issue with Grimm. I would write something and then I'd watch an episode of Grimm and they would do a show about something I just wrote about. And I'm like, oh, great.
You're like, yeah, really. Be like, I promise I thought of it on my own. I really did, you know. So, yeah. but, you know, I mean, there's... you hear all the time there's nothing new under the sun. All we can do is just, tweak everything a little. And so, yeah, that's what I did.
Well, now the reverse is true, though, with Michael, because Hollywood movies are coming out now that have things that are in books that Michael wrote that were, you know, obviously written years, you know, in years in the past. So
yeah.
That happened the other way, too. Michael's clearly ahead of them.
Like they say, if you want to know what's going on in HBO, go to the library first, you know? So,
right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But now, with, you know, as far as your books go, what do you think is the hardest thing about today's, I guess, you know, you use the term market climate to modern publishing, as far as getting your name out there, what's one of your stuff in that huge volume of releases that's going, it goes on every week. What are some of the hardest things that you've encountered, as you've gotten out there?
Well, now, when I first released it, everything was different on marketing. It changed, the way to market changed so much. So, like, you could put something on Facebook and people would run with it, but now you can't. You know, Facebook doesn't let you share anymore. They change their algorithm so only a few people see what you're saying. So that made it so much more difficult. And, you know, they do that just so is everybody okay over there?
You got somebody's phone is buzzing, I think, a little bit.
Okay.
Not sure who's.
Not me.
That's embarrassing. Oh, my goodness. What did you eat? Okay. So, anyway, I think with the way that Facebook has changed their marketing and the Internet is just so saturated with new authors that haven't been vetted, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's very difficult now to get your book out. So unless you have, you know, stunning covers that look like you took the time to actually do your covers well, so that way it reflects what's in the book, you have to have, you know, stunning covers. You have to have a good online presence and not go to 20 different websites, you know, focus on a core group of websites, you know, Facebook and Twitter and, you know, so just focus on, you know, three or four, you know, social media platforms is what I found to be best, the easiest mm-hmm. to, otherwise you spend all your time marketing to a few people here and there, and it doesn't work that way. So, yeah.
Yeah,
it's changed a lot since the beginning.
Yeah, I've seen that as well. And, yeah, it's so easy for today's author to get spread thin, like you said, with social media, and end up, having your entire day consumed between far too many platforms. And it's good to not be, you know, dependent upon one, but also not be spread too thin among many. That's always been my kind of view, you know, finding that balance. And I think saying what you said about three or four to specialize in, you know, as far as for your marketing, I think that's a pretty good medium, you know, for you know, that covers a good core without being too dependent on one. Just in case,
right.
Yeah, you get the rug pulled out from under you, you know, on one of them, you're not going to be totally at a loss. So, always are changing. That is a big problem, I think. And now, as far as influences go with you as a writer, who fired your author passion in, you know, growing up, and then who are your, do you have other influences today?
Growing up, I didn't have one particular author that I followed. If I saw a book that mm-hmm. I liked, I'd be like, yeah, I'll try it out. So I didn't have one in particular. And it's really going to sound odd, especially coming from me and my genre. But my biggest influence was the Bible. The mm-hmm. the stories that are in there, if you actually read it like a novel, you know, I mean, without the Bible study and things like that, without going to church, but if you actually read the Bible as a story, it is very interesting, and, you know, you can bring out, your personality comes through whatever you're reading. So I, you know, read all the darker parts, and it was just very it was just a very, very good influence, you know. on, I guess, on me and everything. So, and that's where, actually, that's where my name comes from, in case nobody knows it's that. My full pen name is Athalia Eve Spikenard. And Athalia is a woman in the Bible who murdered her entire family. She killed her grandchildren, her everybody, so she could keep the throne. So there you go.
Wow.
That for influence?
That's where it comes from.
That's where it comes from.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You're planning on keeping the throne, huh? You're not letting it go. Okay.
Oh, I'm not letting that thing go at all. No. So I will kill anybody that gets in my way. So watch out. So anyway, that's where my name comes from.
Well, it's interesting you bring it up as, you know, looking at the Bible strictly as a literary work, because there are, even books, books of the Bible like Song of Solomon and so forth that were, you have, as far as like erotic lit, literature, that's woven into it. And people don't think of that per se, when you think of the Bible, but it actually does reflect a whole range of styles of literature. And I think that's a really good point you raised, because I myself was fascinated by some of the same things growing up, just looking at the different types of stories styles of literature that's in the Bible, that more poetic and even erotic and all kinds of stuff you find once you dig in there that you don't necessarily get told about totally in Sunday school, but it's like
you
dig in there, it's just amazing stuff in there. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Ezekiel, you have it's almost like fantasy, Ezekiel and Revelation, mm-hmm. and some parts of Daniel, it's almost like fantasy. And then you have, the poetry of Psalms and, the erotica of, that. And then my favorite book is Ecclesiastics, and that is the most depressing book in the entire Bible.
Mm-hmm.
It is very depressing. It's the one where it's kind of like, he knows everything already. He's been granted all this wisdom. He knows everything, so he's depressed. Because there's nothing new, Everything he does is, he works. And, he's just, just pretty much depressed. So it's a, I don't know why that one is my favorite, but it just is. It's the very darker side of, So there you go. It's the darker side of the human soul. Instead of just the stories, it's the in depth of what you're feeling. So that always helps, when you're writing about dark, somebody's dark soul. It always helps to have that as a, in the back of your head.
What do you think, Michael, about that? About as far as like the Bible, because I know you've grown up familiar with obviously the Bible and stuff. Creep into your horror writing and things like that, or as far as like looking at literature and the dark edges of it, or.
Oh yeah. I mean, growing up, especially Book of Revelations. There's dark fantasy to that. There's horror to that. All the stories of the Bible. I mean, you've got everything in the Bible. You've got love stories. You've got, when you look at David and Bathsheba, and you've got tragedy. You've got, really, the Bible for a lot of authors throughout history has been a springboard to get things started, because it does have all types of stories. I think for a lot of people, who grow up in, families with the faith and whatnot, that, the Bible is the first, novel, the first long form book that we read.
Yeah,
I think Addie raised a really good point, because I was the same way growing up. I mean, I looked at it like a novel at some points too, and it's just filled
well,
with a lot of diversity.
Did you ever see a series? It was a limited series, and it didn't last, but it was called Kings.
It was on NBC.
TV.
Yeah. I thought it was good. It's a shame it didn't last because I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, and I've you know always wanted to do something like that where you take a book of the Bible and you tell it in some sort of because I mean it was basically they took the Book of Kings and they turned it into a fantasy dystopian society.
Yeah, it was brilliant
and
the way they did it.
Yeah. So
yeah.
I always wanted to
do the story, of course, of my name, you know, because Athalia is Jezebel's granddaughter. So you could start it with Jezebel and go all the way to where, you know, she's, you know, she dives out the window and gets eaten by dogs. So I thought that'd be a kind of a good, you know, a good ending to that. Yeah. So I always wanted to do that one and then, you know, add in a few tidbits like Jael, the woman who nails the guy's head with a tent spike. She kills him, you know, the...
Right.
Oh,
yeah,
so that's always a good story.
Oh,
you know that one? What I'm talking about? Yeah. He was like the leader of another army and she, you know, got him drunk and nailed his head to the floor with a tent spike. So, you know, just little things like that, of course, they're not going to teach you. They don't teach that in Sunday school. And they don't teach
You had people being roasted alive, you know? I mean, you
had... And being cut up, you know, like a man cut up his concubine into 12 pieces and sent her throughout the country. So, all kinds of interesting things. So when you read it as a novel, it changes your whole outlook, you know, and then you're like, okay. And then also, you know, as a Christian, you're not really, if you read it like that, you're not really afraid to really put depth into your books because, you know, it's already out there. So,
that's
just how I feel, yeah.
Well, like the first actual story that I wrote when I was back in school and everything was one about God, and it's called In the Beginning, and it was basically on God being lonely. And wanting to, you know, bring somebody else into his life and stuff and creating Earth because of it.
Now that's interesting.
Well,
that's a good angle.
One of my favorite short stories of all time is by Neil Gaiman. And it's just simply called Murder Mystery, but it's basically a murder mystery in heaven. When they were working on creating the universe, creating Earth, and a murder happens, and they charge one of the angels with investigating. You know, he basically becomes the angel of death, the angel of wrath, but he has to investigate this murder and dole out justice, and it's amazing. It's an amazing story. It's one of my favorite stories. It's one of my favorite stories ever. If you can find it, it was originally published in a magazine called Midnight Graffiti. But you can find it. There is a collection, which is where I first read it, of stories from Midnight Graffiti that's out there. But I don't know where else it's published. But if you look it up, it's called Murder Mystery by Neil Gaiman, and it is one of the best short stories ever.
Nice. Great.
Yeah. Then you get things like C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters, which is, you know,
right.
Like I said,
where
you get just amazing insights into human nature being, you know, explored, you know, through that. And it's amazing the creative inspiration that comes out of something like the Bible, like even like one line in Genesis about the Nephilim. Obviously, that's been used to give birth tons of stuff in the creative world. It's only in one verse in Genesis, and you know, of course, you can look at Revelations and its influence on, you know, film franchises like The Omen, more openly to everything. And, you know, I mean, it's definitely had a profound influence on, you know, all kinds of genre writing.
Everything's a, and all yeah, genres. The Exorcist,
yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I actually, after I saw The Exorcist as a teenager, I actually found a copy of The Rite of Exorcism and read the whole thing. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a trip.
Yeah. You know, when I was young, my mother, I don't remember how old I was, 10 maybe. I don't remember when it came out. But once it came out to where I could watch it at home, my mother had me sit down and watch it. And she said, "This can happen to you. You better keep praying." That was a warning. That was my, yeah. So she's like, you better watch out because that can really happen. So you better, you know, keep your prayers up.
Yeah, well they had, you know, it was the anniversary of it just about a month ago. They were shut, you know, a lot of the websites were sharing, you know, footage of people actually, you know, coming out of the theater and just being totally shocked. And
oh,
totally, you
freaked
know,
out, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, almost like PTSD, you know, people
yeah.
coming out of the theater. And, you know, it's amazing to think that, you know, you don't normally see that now, you know, because we're so,
no.
we're so jaded now. But,
well, you know, during what was it when the Passion of the Christ came out, that guy confessed to killing his girlfriend after watching the movie.
Yeah.
Did you hear that? Yeah. You know, it's like wow, when something's really well done.
And you know, I've always that's another thing. I mean, you can look at Passion of the Christ, and Passion of the Christ is a horror movie at its
oh,
core.
Yes.
I mean, you've got you know, good versus evil. You've got
torture, betrayal,
and that portrayal of Satan is just creepy.
Oh yeah.
But when you look at a lot of the classic horror movies, I mean, I love the what I like to call the Unholy Trinity. The you got Rosemary's Baby, The Omen, and The Exorcist, all coming out
yeah.
there in the early 70s. But you know, a lot of the horror movies that really stand up, you know, have a religious center to them. So it's
mm-hmm.
you know and even movies like Hellraiser and other movies, you know, it's like if you didn't have an understanding of you know, you can't play with cliches or with you know, known tropes if you don't know those tropes. So
that's right.
You know, it's like people talk about C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, you know, being great friends and the classic works that they were able to create, and you know it was works of high fantasy, but it all began with you know their discussions of faith.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also you know I mean back then. Everybody went to church. It was just a given that's just
right.
what you do. And you followed your parents, and so you know all the typical stories. And, you know, so
right.
therefore it was easily recognized in all of those movies, good versus evil.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, now the lines are blurred, but back then, yeah, everybody knew. So, you know, so the when The Exorcist came out and, you know, it was, you know, and then it went all the way up to, you know, Amityville Horror, and people were like, wow, just, you know, talking about ghosts, and they start researching, where is this really coming from? And
even now, you know, you got Annabelle and The Conjuring and The Nun, and all of that is playing with, different aspects of, you know, and a lot of these, you know, people think, oh, these demons and whatnot, they're all made up. And I was like, no, I mean, if you look.
No. Yeah, there's like, well, did you ever watch the series Lucifer? Did you ever watch that?
Yeah.
I love that show. Love it. It's so funny. And they got him, you know, I mean, they showed him in a different light, but when you go back and read everything, he's spot on. So I thought that was hilarious, that,
well,
you know, the way that
another,
they made him so arrogant.
Another show that, and another show that I was really upset that they canceled was Reaper. And, I mean, if anybody could, I mean, Ray Wise as the devil was just, I mean, it was just so spot on.
Yeah.
He relished every moment of that. And the whole, you know, fallen angel, demon aspect that they you know, they delved into that quite a bit. But, I forget what show it was where they had one of the characters was visited by, I mean, they were, the one of the characters was talking to the devil or visited by the devil, and then an angel shows up, and the angel looks like the devil, and they're like, well, we're all angels at one point, you know, and whatnot, and it's just, you had the same actor playing both roles and kind of like riffing.
Oh,
on it.
Wow.
It was really interesting. I can't for the life of me remember what that show was, but yes, I mean, there's been some, you know, all of that is just all, you know, up for interpretation. But, you know, and the same thing with mythologies, you know, you go back and you read the Greek mythologies, you read, you know, different mythologies from around the world.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole, the Norse is really interesting.
Yeah.
Japanese mythologies, and you know, it's like if you know, you think that there's, you know, nothing new under the sun, and that may be true, but if you go back and you read the roots of different mythologies and whatnot, it can really spur your imagination to, you know, weave your own.
Exactly. That pretty much sums up the whole. How that was my main influence. So, yep.
Wow. I think we've given the best answer or response to a question that we've had in our history right here.
But, you know, it's something that I think everybody can relate to, you know, whether or not they've ever gone to church or not, but everybody knows something about it, you know, and they all have their own opinion. So it's just, you have a whole wide range of creativity that you can, you know, glean from it. So,
that is awesome. That is awesome. So, either you, Daniel, Michael, do you have any questions for the next, or should we move on to some other stuff with Addie?
I was looking at moving on to some other stuff with her.
Okay.
She was talking earlier about her way of being creative. Can you give us an example? staring at the walls, you know, meditative and stuff like that. But do you ever go, you know, go out and do any grounding or anything like that, you know, for your creativity, or do you just sit at home, or what do you do for that?
Oh, like aside from writing, is that what you mean? I'm not sure. Reword the question.
With your writing, do you all your work at home, or do you go out someplace, or what do you do with in?
Oh, okay.
Do you go out?
I am too easily distracted. I cannot. Whenever I write, it has to no music, no TV, no noise, no nothing, and the room has to be pretty dark. So, because otherwise I won't be able to focus, and so I have to, and my mind wanders, and, you know, way too many. So it's almost like, you know, when you're a little kid in elementary and they put those blinders up on your desk because you can't focus. That's what I have to do, you know, like put one of those horse blinders on my, to be able to focus. Otherwise I, you know, my mind goes off and you know, I'll stop and stare at something, and then half an hour later, I'll forget what I was writing. So, I cannot be out in public and write anything. I can't, I know some people can, you know, sit in bookstores, you know, or the coffee shops and write. And I would love to be able to do that, but no, I would, no, I'd start talking to somebody and meet a new friend, and then boom, you know, there goes my whole writing. So, no, I'm a homebody.
Do you happen to have a particular word count or anything like that that you're looking at getting, or do you just write until you're done writing for the day?
I pretty much just write until I'm done writing. I'm not really a word count person, because then I don't want to force myself into creating something that's not naturally flowing. So some days I'll write, you know, 3 or 4 hours, and then others I'll write 30 minutes. So nothing is consistent. And then there's some days where I'll write 10 minutes here, you know, I'll get up, do the dishes, you know, 30 minutes there, do some laundry. So I'm a stay at home, you know, I this is my work. It can be broken up into, you know, many different segments, but if my mind's not there, I try not to force it, because then I'll have to go back and rewrite, you know, everything. So that's how it is. My short attention span.
I can definitely relate to the having isolate to write. I'm also like that, where I can't write, you know, if I'm other folks are around, or, you know, in public or things like that. The interesting thing is, yeah, you need silence. I actually do put on music for the purpose of actually shielding myself from outside sounds. Music off my stereo actually creates this sonic bubble that actually gives me that non-distractive kind of environment. Believe it or
like
not,
like white noise for you, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, if a car pulls up in the neighborhood or some, you know, stuff, that would actually distract me more than a solid wall of music. So it's yes. I understand that real well.
Yeah, I live on a farm, so the most I'll hear is, mm-hmm. you know, cows. You know, I'll hear some cows moving,
right.
Or a dog barking, or, you know, a hawk, you know, owl screeching. That's about it. So.
Nice.
Those are my distractions. Yeah, yeah. So I will say that moving out here has helped to, get some more writing done now that I don't have the a neighborhood to distract me.
Yeah, I've always found that very distracting, and the neighborhood suburbia sounds. Now moving along just a little bit here, because I want to make sure we cover it, though, is – you know, Kentuckiana Authors, because I think it's a great group, and you've expanded that into some great events. I'd like to talk about the origins of it. What possessed you to get into that? Because that is something that, yeah, that is an undertaking, and you do it out of a more of a passion approach, because it's something you know it's obviously people can join for free and, you know, be a part of. And what got you into it, and because it's grown into a nice regional group.
Yeah, I had no friends, and no. So I always say I did it because I have no friends. I had to make them. What happened is I would read in the paper, you know, so-and-so did a book signing, or there's, you know, I missed a book fair or something like that, and I was so frustrated to read everything after it had happened. And I'm like, there's got to be some kind of a central location, you know, or a website or something that tells me what's going on regionally, so I can go and support, you know, authors or, you know, things like that. And there really wasn't. So I decided, okay, I'll create it and, you know, hopefully they will come. You know, if you build it, they will come. So that's what I did. You know, we started off with I think there was four of us, Lisa and Jay and Madden, and Who else was? I forgot who else. Heather started off. She was, you know, one of the first ones. So it was very slow at the beginning, but then it picked up quite quickly. And once the word of mouth got out that it wasn't that all it was just a connection place and not, you know, I'm not here to charge you for the information. That helped out a lot, you know, because there were a lot of websites that, you know, if you wanted to know where, if you wanted a list of, you know, things to go to, you had to pay. You know, even if it was a dollar, you still had to pay, and I didn't like that. So so that's what I set out to do, and so it's grown, and it's mainly grown on Facebook more than anything, of course. And we have a website, but we are getting ready to revamp the entire website. Lisa is going to be taking that on. She's, you know, everybody knows her, probably got introduced to Kentuckiana Authors through her. She always introduces all the new people. And she's going to be working on that, and we're going to change things up. We're going to update our calendar. We're going to have we're going to be announcing our scholarship. We're going to have a scholarship for all those in the Kentuckiana Authors, for the students, and we'll be announcing that this spring. And so it'll be fun, but we are at the point now that that we need to step up our game to keep up with everybody. So we have almost, I don't know how many members we have now. Well,
close
over 800.
900, I think.
Are we at 900?
You're tipping up toward 900. I know. No, it's climbing toward that. Yeah, right now.
Awesome.
I can't
That's
remember the
awesome.
Exact amount. It's in the upper 800s right now.
It's up there. It's up there. So, mm-hmm. And it's funny because this spring I'm going to have a party for Kentuckiana Authors here on my farm, and so I'm glad I have it, you know, big enough place for everybody to come to. But we'll have a big bonfire, so that way it's a great group to where, you know, people that you talk online to all the time, asking questions and, you know, getting help for, you know, certain aspects of writing. Now you'll actually get to talk to them face to face. It's a good community. And that's what I really liked about it. So that way you don't go to a book fair and you like, I don't know anybody here and I'm nervous. But no, everybody helps out. So that's what
I
like about it.
Actually, what I have seen in the regional scene, at least, is that a lot of the people that interact on there have gotten to really know each other out in person. And so the Kentuckiana Authors site has actually kind of catalyzed a kind of a reunion mentality at all the events where, you know, when we go out to events, we all see each other and know each other. And, you know, but Kentuckiana Authors is the place that we all, you know, interact together. And it's
like
it's really, you know, online. And
Cheers version. Yeah. Everybody
so
knows
weirdly
your name.
Enough,
yeah.
I have never met Lisa, I don't think, yet, still to this day. So,
and you know
I don't
what?
Think I have met
Neither
her.
Have I. Neither have I. Never met her in
it's
person.
It's just like a mystery.
I know she exists.
Well, I know she exists. She posts
she's
like
there.
Every day.
Yeah. I know she's fantastic. I forgot where she lives in Kentucky, up on, you know, up in a little mountain. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, she's so great online that she's like, yeah, I already know everybody. I don't need to meet you in person. Right, Lisa?
She can
Are
get her
listening?
Out to the party. Yeah, see if you can lure her out to the spring party.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
I know. Have her come out. Come out to the... To this ice cream. It's going to be an ice cream social on the farm. So, you know, bring some ice cream and we're going to have a good bonfire and marshmallows and all that good stuff. So, yeah.
That'd be awesome.
It'll be fun. It'll be fun.
She'll come out there and you'll find out that she's actually a 50-year-old trucker that, you know.
That's funny, really. Yeah. Or she'll be like some, you know, 12-year-old who's posing as, yeah. So.
Or it'll be J.K. Rowling.
That may be, that may be the reason she can't drive yet, so.
Yeah, that's why. That's right. She's not old enough to drive, and that's why she doesn't come out to us.
Or it'll be J.K. Rowling posing as Kentuckian. You know, you never know. It could be completely a complete alias.
You never know.
But no, it is the thing I notice about that group more than other groups I've seen that just become, you know, you have the outlet so people can make people aware of things going on. You have your promo days. But the thing that I think is cool is that the way that you've kind of kept all that in a good ordered way has resulted that, you know, there's a lot of interaction and engagement that you don't see on other author groups on Facebook, where it's just strictly promo.
It's authors promoting.
Yeah.
And see, I don't visit I don't go to those groups at all because it's a waste of my time. It's just authors promoting to authors. And yes, other authors are readers, but they're not there to, you know, usually find, books. So, yeah. So this is, it's great for interactive. And I've met so many people that are like, oh, I'm just starting out writing. I have no idea what to do, where to go, who to talk to, nothing. And so it's a good starting point. You know, I'll tell them, I'll be like, here, just go to Kentuckiana Authors on Facebook and ask any question you want, and we will always be there to answer. You know, we'll tell you exactly where to go, what to do, everything. And it's just a huge relief that resource is there. And, you know, they don't have to pay $20 for a book on how to, you know, self-publish. So it's fantastic, yeah. It's a great group. And it's the people in the group themselves are so helpful. And that's what I really love about it. You know, is that
and
nobody's
see
there.
And Ren Garcia's latest artwork. Oh, man, he's always, posting cool artwork.
yeah. I love it.
From Columbus, Ohio.
That's right. Yeah, and I'm like within a 200-mile radius of you know, Louisville, and he's like, I'm 206. I'm like, well, sorry, bye. Sorry, you're 6 miles out. You don't qualify. Get out of the group. No. So I told him where
his grandfather him is. He's like a fixture in Kentucky events, though. I mean, he is always doing Kentucky events and definitely a face in the scene. So, I mean, yeah, if there's anyone that you know, even if he was 500 miles away, I'd still consider him a Kentucky author because he's always down here. So, always active in our scene. And,
he knows where to love it.
And, yeah, it's neat because the other thing is that I I'm of this mentality, you know, with how we approach Imaginarium. But the other cool thing about your group is that it's all genre. It's not, it doesn't sway to any one, it's not weighted to any one particular group of authors. It's, you know, like I said, when people are helping each other, you can see a romance author, a mystery author, a fantasy author, all chiming in with perspectives. And it's really, I love that. Because it's a very comprehensive group of people, not just one thing.
When we first started off, right? I think there was maybe 20 people in the group, and Heather, you know, she has the books on witches, you know, a lot of her stuff, and this woman, you know, came in and she joined, you know, she joined the group. And then she came around and she said, I cannot be a part of this group if there's a witch in the group. And I'm like, okay, I guess you can't be a part of it. You know, I'm like, bye. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm not, you know, this is not an exclusive, you know, group to a certain group of people. I'm sorry. You know, this is all inclusive. Everybody is allowed in, and I don't care what you write. You know, the only things I wouldn't accept like the, you know, if Amazon doesn't accept it, I won't accept it. How about that? That's a good word.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
obviously,
if you're
extreme lines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Extreme. Yeah, I don't like the extreme. But otherwise, you know, yeah, come on in and you know, promote whatever you want. So.
Yeah, and that
yeah,
kind of camaraderie, we say here on the Star Chamber show, a horror author can learn from a mystery author and vice versa, because you know different techniques that are predominant in a certain genre can be very employable in another genre in terms of the elements.
Yeah.
And so there's so much that can be learned from other genres. So I never understand, you know, people that only associate with their people that are of their genre. You know,
I think the
authors is a very healthy group to be a part of.
Yeah. Get out of your bubble and learn. I mean, imagine how good Wuthering Heights would have been, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and all the classics, you know, Gone with the Wind. I mean, you know, might not have drone on forever if they had some help with some thriller writers. So, yeah.
Sure, yeah. But, yeah, there is something to be said for that. And, and it's built up into a nice group, which, you know, has led to events, which, let me tell you, I understand. Those are not easy to put on. And you take on that challenge and run things like the book blitz and stuff like that. Go ahead and talk a little bit about the event side of things that's grown out of that.
So this last year we had, you know, for the past 4 years, we've had the Kentuckiana Authors Book Blitz, and we've, you know, tried different venues. This year we are taking a break, and we are reevaluating where the best place for the book blitz is going to be, and so we will return in 2020 with a new venue and a new way to figure it out, and hopefully someplace where bigger and better than ever before, you know, because 1 year we got rained on and it was just, and then last year we got rained, the event was rained out, nobody was on the streets, you know, coming to the event, and there was this poor guy, he was homeless and he had some mental issues, and he would stand in the front door and just laugh, and it kind of creeped everybody out. Nobody wanted to walk into our event because, you know, this poor guy was blocking our, you know, blocking our event. So that was, yeah, that was something.
Michael, why'd you have to go do that?
I know. And, you know, I felt bad for him, but you know, you could tell he had some mental issues.
Right,
He should not be out on the street, you know. And, but he was out there blocking our, blocking our way. So, so whatever customers would have come through the rain, they didn't. So we are going to reevaluate it, and we're going to make it bigger and better. So.
Yeah, because it's not an easy undertaking, and my hat's off to you on that, because that's, you know, when you're booking venues and putting together groups and scheduling and promoting and the events, and then, of course, like, you know, you've alluded to, there's so much that you cannot plan for and cannot control that happens, and that's
exactly.
That's always something you contend with no matter what kind of event you do, and that's tough. That's very tough. And I was wondering, what plans? Yeah, I was going to get to that. Now you've answered that question, but yeah, just what is coming up, you know, in 2019 that's affiliated with you event wise, and. Of course, you know, we consider
we're
you part of the Imaginarium family, specifically, Kentuckiana author related events. I mean, what's, you know, if there's anything coming up, I definitely, you know, always want to promote that for you.
Yeah, no, just the, you know, just the big party here, you know, on the farm, and then we're going to be launching the new website. And then we're going to be adding a scholarship for, you know, when we have the scholarship, and that's going to, what we're thinking is we're going to start the scholarship with just us in Kentuckiana authors, you know, those who have kids that are, you know, going to be graduating soon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just going to be open to just us for the first maybe year or 2 years until, you know, we get a real good handle of what we're doing. And then we are going to open it up nationwide. When we open it up nationwide, we're hoping to get publicity for all of the authors that are here in Contagena Authors. So we're not just, you know, publicizing to ourselves. We're publicizing to the nation. So and we're going to do that through the scholarship and hopefully make it something, you know, something a little bit bigger than what it is. So we're hoping to, you know, not expand the group to a nationwide group, but we're expanding our reach nationwide.
Right.
So that's what I'm hoping to do. Yeah. So.
Yeah, because I think you've got,
there we go.
Like I said, I think you've got a great, we have a great regional scene. We being, you know, I'm from Kentucky, obviously, too, and it's like, yeah, I think there's a great regional scene here. I mean, I think you definitely fill a very needed thing with Kentuckiana Authors to spotlight that.
I'm going to keep it here and keep the group, you know, as like we are right now. And, you know, but eventually I'd like, you know, I'd like the world to see how great we are here, you know? So.
Well, on another side, how do you find out about all the different events that are going on for the Kentuckiana Authors?
Well, the good thing about it is that now people are coming to us and telling us. So they are coming and saying, hey, I have a book signing here, or I'm having a book fair there. So they are coming and asking to promote, you know, and I say, hey, yeah, you can promote whatever you want, just make it on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So now I don't have to go searching it out anymore. And then some people are like, well, you know, I never heard about it. And I'm like, well, then, you know, it's, like some of the things that the public libraries do. Louisville Public Library is pretty good at getting their name out, but some of the smaller libraries, New Albany and Jeffersonville, I have to keep reminding them, you know, you have this resource here. If you want people to show up, you know, use it. So, you know, come on in and promote it. You have, you know, over 800 people that, you know, you can tap into that are, you know. I don't go searching it out anymore because that would be exhausting. But if they want to promote it, then by all means, please, you know, promote it. And so that's what I ask. And then, you know, any of the authors who are actually attending these events, you know, we ask them to promote it also, because the more times it shows up, you know, like any author who goes to Imaginarium, the more authors that promote themselves saying, hey, if you want to see me, I'll be at Imaginarium, you know, then the more the word gets out, you know, on the event itself. So that's how we do it. So to do it organically.
Yeah, and I've noticed some groups like the some new groups starting to really be involved on your group, like the Arno Conference for the Humanities. I've noticed them posting more, and some really good groups and some really good events and guests that are now definitely have come onto your radar, I think.
Now that we've grown to, you know, so many people. Now that they're noticing us, it's nice that they're taking the time to, you know, promote themselves to us. So it makes my job easier.
Yep, and you are at 859 currently. I just logged over there just to see.
Hey, awesome!
So,
nice.
Doing very good there. I have to give a shout out to Kenneth Morris too. He's somewhere out there tonight, I bet. Somewhere.
Oh yeah,
listening to the show.
Yeah, he's my right hand man. Lisa's my right hand woman. He's my right hand man. So yeah.
I see him at all the events.
Have you met him?
So yeah, I think I'd be remiss in not giving him a shout out here while we're talking about Kentuckiana Authors, for sure.
Oh yeah. Oh,
oh
yeah.
Man.
For sure.
Oh
yeah, he's a big part of it.
We are coming up on about 5.5 minutes left in the show. So is there anything as far as projects that you have going on in the book realms or Kentuckiana authors that we have not addressed yet that you would like to?
No, not yet. Well, you know, I mean, everything will, once we get the website out and, you know, then we can start promoting everything. But at the moment, no, we're just in a, just working things out right now. So.
Working things
out.
What
will be the web address?
Right now, I mean, it's the old website. It's not updated yet, but it's KentuckianaAuthors.com.
Okay.
KentuckianaAuthors.com.
.com, yes.
And does Kentuckiana Authors have any dedicated social media channels outside of Facebook? Like, do y'all have a Twitter feed or anything like that yet?
We did, but I'm hardly ever on it. So I'll be Lisa's going to be my web guru. So we'll have her updating there, and we're going to expand to Pinterest. I'm always on Pinterest, so we'll have authors on, you know, promote their books on Pinterest also, because it's a great, you know, you see your cover and then you click to the link. So we'll probably do that too. Yeah.
Well, I know somebody will be active on your Pinterest page. That'll be Holly, because she spends a lot of time on Pinterest. So she will be very happy to hear about that.
I see all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Things all the time.
This is not her co-hosting week, but I know she loves everything you do. And she'll be thrilled to hear that there's a Pinterest emphasis. Yeah, because she'll definitely be there.
we're gonna do that. We're gonna do that. And you know, not just and especially on Pinterest, everything's creative. So it's not just the books, but you know, also artwork and things like that. So I'm sure we'll see a lot of Ren there too.
That's awesome. And all right. So, so everybody, if you're on Facebook, look up Kentuckiana Authors. You know, if you're in, you know, like a 200-mile radius, you said, of Louisville.
200-mile radius, yes.
But they let me in, too, so that didn't matter.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're within range, I do believe. Are you?
I am not within 200 miles, actually.
Yeah, because you aren't too far away.
Not too far away.
No, you are. You are. I'd almost wager you're within the range, but because I know where you are, Daniel. I'm gonna have to research that, but I think if you're probably like Ren, you're probably like 5 miles outside the range, but
just barely out. Yeah. So,
yeah, I'm not far. I'm not far outside the range, but I am outside the range by just unless you go on a circumference instead of a map.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. It's a circumference. Yeah.
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 I may just barely make it under there on that. So.
Yeah. we'll let you. We'll keep you.
So KentuckianaAuthors.com is the name of the website. Look up Kentuckiana Authors on Facebook if you are an author within this range that we've been discussing, and help Addie get up to 900 very soon.
Woo-hoo!
And get that new milestone. And go ahead and give your contacts right now. We've got about 90 seconds on the live show. Give your contacts for where to find you as an author, so people can check out your works.
Yeah, you can find me at on Facebook, just Addie, Atty Eve, Eve. So just find me on Facebook, and that's pretty much where I dedicate it. It's easier. It's easier for my distracted mind to stay on Facebook.
Awesome. Yes, and send you good sloth pictures, and you get brownie points.
Yes. Anything sloth, yes. Or alpaca, I'll take alpaca too. Yes.
Alpacas.
And alpacas. That's what this farm is going to be eventually, alpaca. So, yeah.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, will it be a haven for alpacas or a farm for alpacas?
It's going to be a it's going to be a fiber farm. So alpacas and rabbits and goats, all fiber animals. So,
oh my.
There you go. Yeah. Not a tree farm like in my book. I'm not going to bury anybody out here. You're welcome.
Now, Daniel handles all that stuff. Yeah, that's what he does for our organization.
Oh, be like, yeah,
but,
that's a nice tree.
But go ahead, Daniel and Michael, is there anything else you guys would like to cover tonight?
No, I think we covered,
I can't think of anything right at this time. I'm sure as soon as the show's over with, something will come to my mind, but yeah.
Well, then we'll just have to get Addie back on the schedule before
3 in the morning.
Yeah. We'll have to get Addie back on the schedule soon then. Yeah, just so she can come back and hang out with us. And the ice cream social, what day is that? Like, I don't know if you mentioned that or not.
No, we haven't picked down a day. I'm probably thinking the Sunday after Father's Day. In June.
Okay. In June.
So,
okay.
But, you know, by then, you know, all the kids are out of school, so you can bring your families and you know, have a good time. So.
Not wanting to really think about ice cream right now.
Yeah.
Winter is when most ice cream is sold in the country, so.
Is it really?
That is actually true.
Sitting in the house and bored, so you have to snack on ice cream.
Yeah, wintertime is when the most ice cream in the year is sold.
Wow.
That is actually true. I can vouch for him on that. That's cool.
Well, I'm from Colorado, so we would just, you know, eat the snow. Not the yellow one, but the, you know, we'd make our own. Yeah.
Well, hey, that's awesome. I was born in Denver. I was there for just a cameo, but I guess my folks moved to St. Louis right after that, like a year after that. But yeah, I was actually born in Denver. So we have a Colorado connection, Addie.
Yes, yes.
So that lack of oxygen to your brain, is that what, you know, attests to what happened to you later?
That's exactly it.
Yeah, if I had oxygen in the brain, I would have picked a much more a comfortable career path, I think.
Yeah. We would have thought about this a little more clearly, yeah.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight, Addie. It's been an awesome discussion. I think we've definitely got a great look behind your work as an author and your process, and got to explore Kentuckiana authors. And, yeah, I think we've definitely covered it, I think. It's definitely been the Addie Eve Show. And we even found out where the name came from, which is awesome. I'm totally going to get out my Bible tonight and check that story out.
Dig that story out, yeah. It's a hard one to find, so, yeah.
I'll find it. I've read it before. I just didn't retain it, I guess, because I've read the Bible cover to cover like several times. I just didn't, for some reason, didn't click. But I will have to search this out now.
You know where they're hiding. I forgot the name of the king, and they present him when he's 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I forget.
I know where to go to find this. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the story. That's her, because she, you know, she killed everybody. That's why they hide him, and then they bring him out. And she calls treason. You know, she screams treason, treason, and then they kill her in front of the temple. You know, at the temple. So.
Fantastic.
There you go.
That's the that's the roots of the Addie Eve name.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, come back and join us sometime, definitely. And every you know, of course we'd love to have you on you know, of course, for the Imaginarium Hits, to give us updates on the website and the relaunch. And definitely thank you for the work you do, because we need people like you out there. There's far too few of your type of a person, you know, that definitely lifts up the scene across the board. So thank you for the work that you do. I have to say that personally.
Hey, well,
but,
thank you. Thank you, too. So, yeah.
And we'll catch up with you here soon, Addie. And, yeah, I'll let everybody, you included, sign off. But I'll just say real quick, every Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern, the Star Chamber Show live podcast. So, I will sign off now. And then, Addie, you and Daniel and Michael, go ahead and round us out here and say goodnight.
Next week, it's 150 shows.
Yes, 150th show. That's true.
Hey.
A milestone.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Addie Eve, signing off. Y'all have a good night.
Night, Addie.
Yeah, night.